On today's episode of the Brad and Will Show, obviously Stephen Silas has been fired from the Houston Rockets. So the Rockets have a lot of different coaching candidates to choose from, and we're going to dive into those as well. So definitely stay tuned. All right, and welcome back to the episode of the Brad on Will Show. Know it's been a minute, but we're back. I'm your host, Will. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff at Bias Houston. Over there, we've been doing a lot of the content aggregation. Season's over, so there's no more post-game spaces, but you know, there's going to be a bunch of space throughout the offseason talking about everything Houston Rockets that happens this summer. So make sure if you want to keep up with the Houston Rockets, and I mean, we've been branched out to Texas now lately, so want to keep up with any of that, you know, make sure you tap in over there. I'll quickly shout out the Brad on Will Show on YouTube. Like I said, we've been gone for a little minute. We're back now. And yeah, if you just continue to tap in with us over there on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, we appreciate that. Pass it off to Brad.
Gone for a little minute, but we're back now. It has been a minute, but it's good to be back. As always, you can find my stuff on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at BradoNBA. Favorite stats, highlights, all that good stuff, Houston related, even NBA covers now. It's playoffs. I got you covered there. Today, man, we got the special guest, big favorite on Rockets Twitter right now, the Vader. So go ahead and shout yourself out if you don't know who he is already.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Vader is, man. No play.
All right, it's Vader. You can find me on pretty much all social media platforms, Twitter, IG, and also check me out on the Rocket Fuel podcast on YouTube with LaShard Binkley.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like I said, Vader, we always appreciate you coming on the show to talk with us. Like I said, man, some pretty serious news happened. Something I guess we kind of all somewhat saw coming. I think we all kind of knew that this was going to happen. But Stephen Silas and the Houston Rockets decided not to come back next season. They said they were going to part ways. So the Rockets are without a head coach right now. That's one of the things we're going to talk about is the head coaching search. Before we get into, like, you know, our candidates on who we believe the next head coach of the Houston Rockets should be, we want to kind of just break down and analyze Stephen Silas being, I won't even say he was fired, just being let go, what that means for him, what that means for us, and you know, kind of our thoughts on him being let go in general. So I'll let the guests go first, Vader, then I'll go to you, Brad, and then, you know, I'll kind of sum it up myself.
Cool. All right, so my whole thing is, and I think we can pretty much all agree, Stephen Silas seems like a great guy. I just think it was the right move for the franchise to move on, just because of the fact that, like, we've lost so much the last 3 years. And I know a lot of people will feel like, well, he is owed an opportunity to like see this thing through, you know, land a plane, so to speak. But I don't know, man. Like, I think the fan base collectively and obviously the front office felt the same way. I think it's time to just kind of go in a different direction. I do appreciate everything that he did while he was here. However, it just seemed like even though he was not dealt a great hand, it's pretty hard to win with a bunch of 19, 20, and 21-year-olds. We've been saying this all year. However, there was just some things that you would have preferred to see more of, more plays being run, more discipline, more guys being held accountable, things of that nature. And I kind of feel like those are the bare minimum things that you would expect to have from your head coach. And we didn't see a lot of that. Like, I think that we saw some of those pictures of him working with Jalen Green, you know, before the game, at practice and stuff like that. You know, those are good things that he does. Like, I think he is good at player development. I think a lot of people don't give him enough credit for what he's able to do as far as, like, helping guys get better individually. But, like, we just didn't see them collectively get better as a team. And some of the, like, lack of discipline that we saw on the floor, I think some of those things can be attributed back to his coaching style. I mean, he's a nice dude. And, you know, sometimes nice guys they finish last, so to speak. I know that's just a cliche saying, but you have to have a balance. You have to be able to, you know, be a strong voice in the room. And when you have a strong personality on the team, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, by all account, there are some guys on the team who, you know, like, you need a firm hand. You need to be able to deal with those guys, not because they're bad people, but, like, you know, everybody comes from different backgrounds and everybody has a different story. So, like, you have to be able to handle a guy who is able to be yelled at. You have to be able to coach a guy who, when you yell at him, he shuts down. And that's just part of the job. And so At the end of the day, you know, I wish him the best. I hope that when he lands on his feet, wherever he goes. But I do think that it's time for the Rockets to go in a different direction. So I'm pretty excited that they didn't hesitate. You know, we joked that like the game didn't even end before they like let him go. You know, it's kind of funny because we were watching a game, and the next thing you know, you're getting Woj bombs and stuff about, you know, how the Rockets aren't picking up his fourth year option or whatever. But I just feel like this is the right move for the franchise.
Yeah, and the Woj bombs was hilarious. I swear, 20 seconds left on the clock, and everyone's getting a notification that Salas has been fired or just let go. You know, they're not going to pick up the extension. So it is crazy, it's just good to see him ultimately let go, because I feel like the Rockets have needed to go in a new direction for a majority of the season, and it's good to see them finally do so. So just looking back at it as a whole, Silas, again, really good guy, down to earth. This is just, it comes down to he came into a situation he wasn't used to. He thought he was going to get Harden and Westbrook, and he got these young guys, and he wasn't built for this rebuild process to take this team to phase two, which is what the Rockets are ultimately going to be looking for now. So when I think of Steven Silas, and Vader put it perfectly, he is good at player development. We have seen these guys develop, but when it comes to unity as a group, we didn't see these guys gelling as well as they should be. A lot of these guys on national media, they'll clown the Rockets for looking like an AAU team. You know, they'll try to run some sets, and if it doesn't work, it's just, all right, let's just see what we can get out here. It wasn't structured enough, and I'm happy they're going in a new direction. And I hope Steven Silas is the best. I really do. He is a good guy, as I mentioned, and I think he can be a really good assistant somewhere else. And maybe, you know, he's learned enough to potentially become a head coach later in the future, but as of right now, he was 59 and 177 with the Rockets. 25.1% is just not going to cut it. I promise this is not going to cut it. So I'm happy to see them going to phase two, and I'll dive into the coaching candidates when we get back around. But we're going to tap in what Will thinks. So, Will, what are your thoughts on Silas getting let go?
Yeah, I think y'all made a lot of great points. I was the person who I think I was very fair with Steven Silas. Like, I don't think that you can say that my opinion on him is like agenda based or based in like something that's outside of like what we saw. Cause I was one of the people last year saying like, give him a chance. Let's see what he can do. Like let's give ourselves a larger sample size to judge him from before we say fire him after, you know, cause we won what, 17 games. People were saying fire him. Like, okay, well, like, you know, there was the injuries, there was the roster turnover, there was, you know, a whole bunch of like continuity issues. And so I was like, okay, let's give him some time. Let's see what he got. And then we can decide we want to move off of him. And I gave him some time. I saw what he got, and it wasn't what I wanted. You know, I think the biggest thing for me, and I think, you know, it's kind of funny if you read the Kelly Eco article, Jalen Green kind of echoed the same thing about, you know, just the large thing was just a lack of structure. It was very much a go out there and have fun experience. That's kind of what we did. It was just go out there, do what you want to do, right? Like it took us a while to get like a hierarchy. And I feel like that hierarchy was kind of more self-established. And I guess you could argue that that was the point. But I mean, these guys are what, 19, 20, 21 years old, man. They need someone to come in and like put them in those positions, put them where they need to be, tell them how to do. Cause I mean, like, yeah, they're not idiots. They're not, you know, they're not, they know how to play basketball, but you know, they were 2 years ago, they were in high school. You know what I'm saying? So now we need someone to come tell them how the NBA works, how, you know, where to be, pick your spots here, there, you know, do that. Just a lack of structure. I think that was one of the biggest things that I had a problem with under Steven Silas. The next biggest thing was the accountability stuff, man. Right. Not only was there a lack of accountability, there was also like selective accountability. We talk about, and I'm of the opinion that accountability cannot be selective. You know, for example, like Alperen Şengün was someone who I think was very held accountable for his actions. Right. Like if Şengün missed a rotation or was getting, you know, getting played up the court defensively, he was sitting down. And with all due respect to like Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr., but there were times where you can make the same argument about those two guys and they would never get sat. And my thing is like, if the whole point is like, we're saying that bad defense doesn't get rewarded, well then everyone who plays bad defense has to get sat down. Right. Cause I can't, if I'm Şengün, I'm like, well, man, like these guys are playing bad too and they're not sitting. So why am I sitting? You know what I'm saying? And like, I just think that breeds bad culture. I don't think that's fair to Şengün. So yeah, that was another thing. There was, you know, times where like who's assistant coach? John Lucas, right? When he took over for a couple of games this season, I did see that, right? I did see accountability out there. I saw him like
– And they responded to it, Will.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, not only did we see accountability, but, like, it worked, right? Like, guys, when you go out there and you tell a guy, I'm going to play you 35 minutes no matter what you do. You can go out there and not try. You can go out there and you can try. Or, like, conversely, like, if you're a guy like Josh Christopher, where I tell you, I'm going to play you 10 minutes a night no matter if you try hard, if you don't try hard, why would I, you know what I'm saying? Why would I do anything other than what I want to do in that scenario, right? If I want to try tonight, I'll try hard. If I don't want to try tonight, I won't try hard. And I feel like that shouldn't be optional. And John Lucas was somebody who didn't make that optional. He was, you know, when I think it was the Pistons game, KJ Martin was kind of out there being lackadaisical, not trying as hard as it was kind of going through the motions. And John Lucas sat him and like sat him for a really long, like I know I'm watching the game. I'm like, man, where's KJ at? Like, he's not playing. And it came out that like that was intentional. And I don't even remember. I forgot what KJ did. I think he like the game clinching shot that game or something like that. But KJ came back and played really, really well after being benched. And so like to me, that's kind of like the proof that, hey, like we're going to demand excellence at all times. And if you don't give that to us, you're going to sit down until you can. And that was something that I don't think Stephen Silas did. And that's when I saw John Lucas do. And I personally prefer the John Lucas way of doing things. I think that's the better way of getting things done.
The accountability, Will, like you said, it was just like it seemed like some guys were being held more accountable and some were being held less accountable. And so like it just seems like, you know, like we don't know what was going on behind the scenes. It just didn't look right. Like the rotations were another thing that I felt like was a Stephen Silas we would all be watching the game and be like, why is this lineup out there? I know Brad had pulled a stat on one of the lineups that we saw on the floor, and it was like literally the worst lineup in the NBA. And we kept going. Yeah.
It was a lineup that Will had pointed out, and he told me to look it up. And Will, correct me if it's wrong, but I think it was Dacian Nix, Josh Christopher, KJ, Tyrese, and Garuba. Was that what it was? That lineup was minus like 34 on the court. A net rating wise, and that was in the 0th percentile in the NBA, like bottom tier.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, and they were throwing that lineup out there to get some real NBA time.
And so, then along with the rookies, like last year, Jalen Green was a rookie, and you kind of felt like he was just kind of thrown out there without a plan. And I know that's not fair to the coaching staff. I know that they had a plan for him, but when he gets in behind a microphone and he says things like, "We're not running plays for Jabari Smith Jr.," it kind of makes you question. Because these are the things that we've been saying when we've been watching the games. Like, are they running plays for Jabari? And, you know, like, I've kind of been giving them the benefit of the doubt. But when you're 19 and 20 years old and you're playing with grown men and your coach is not putting you in the best position to be successful, I kind of think that's malpractice in a way. Like, I know he probably had a philosophy behind it. Like, I'm going to let these guys learn organically or whatever. However, like, me, like if I'm Jalen Green last year or if I'm Jabari Smith Jr. this year, and I know I'm kind of at a disadvantage already from my body's not fully developed, I'm definitely not experienced. I don't know what to expect. And you kind of throwing me out there and kind of just letting me figure it out. Like, give me a plan.
He said that. No, but Vader, like Jalen Green's camp straight up said he wanted more structure. And like that was, once again, that's something that like, if you read that Eagle article that came out after Silas, or actually came out the same time Silas was like mutually parted ways with, they say a lot of the same things that we be saying in spaces and podcasts on the TL about this team. So like, you know, people aren't just making stuff up. I want to respond to like the accountability aspect, because one of the things that I did hear on the TL in like defense of the selective accountability was like people say like, oh, you hurt, so you hold certain players to different standards. And I'm okay, I can kind of get behind that. But then why are we holding like if Jalen Green's the franchise player, shouldn't he be held to the highest standard? Like, isn't that what we want? We would want him to be held to the highest
standard. Why are you holding Josh Christopher to a higher standard than you hold?
Why is Josh Christopher? Exactly. Why is Josh Christopher held to a higher standard than the guy who's supposed to lead this franchise? Mm-hmm. Right. Like, to me, that doesn't make sense. So it was stuff like that. I was going to talk about like the last thing I was going to touch on was like the just like in-game decisions that just didn't make sense. Like, one of the biggest ones being, we saw that god awful Dacian Nix, Josh Christopher, KJ Martin, Tyrese, and Garuba lineup. And I've said on the TL and in spaces plenty of times, with the exception of Deshaun Nix, and all due respect to him, but I don't think he's a basketball, an NBA player, right? With the exception of Deshaun Nix, I think everybody else in that lineup is a solid NBA or has potential to be a solid NBA player, right? You know, they're still young, still developing, but I think they have potential to be solid NBA players. I've seen, you know, Josh take over games. I've seen Garuba impact the games from a defensive rebounding standpoint. I've seen KJ and Tar. I mean, I think those guys are NBA players right now, right? Like, I think those guys are really good at basketball today. They're rotation pieces as we speak. The problem is not that they're not good. The problem is they're not good together, right? It's like you need to sprinkle in. It kind of goes back to like the other thing we complain about. It's like the lack of staggering, right? You play KPJ, Jalen, and Shingun, 10, 12 minutes at a time, and then you're stuck playing this bench unit that's quite literally the worst like lineup in the entire NBA for 4 minutes at a time because your starters are tired. And you look at like, it's something I've been saying like from the jump. You look at a lot of the other teams that have like, I'm not saying that KPJ and Jalen Green or Shingun are like elite yet, but when you have good offensive talent like those guys are, right, you see, you know, most teams will like stagger those guys throughout the game. Like LeBron and Anthony Davis, they're staggered. Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, they're staggered. Paolo and Franz are staggered, right? Like you see, whenever a team has, you know, two guys like that, they make sure that at least one of those guys is on the court at all times so that your offense take a dip. And now it's like, okay, well, now we have this lineup out there that literally cannot stand on its own. Because the best ball handlers is, like I said, in all due respect, is Deshaun Nix. And like,
where's the playmaking coming from in that?
Yeah, where's you know what I'm saying? There's no spacing. There's no shot creation. No playmaking. It's just a bad lineup. And that was a lineup we saw multiple times this season. We saw it more than we saw staggered. But go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, where's the playmaking in that lineup? That's what you could say a lot of times when you watch these Rockets teams. You know, again, if they weren't running through Shangoon, it's like, what are these guys doing? It's a team that was dead last in NBA in assists. Second most turnovers in the NBA. There's a reason why people were saying, oh, this is an AAU team. Like a team that is dead last in assists and second most turnovers. This is bad basketball. It's bad product. And it comes from bad lineups, not having the right guys out there together. We didn't even see that lineup that we're talking about. It played less than 100 possessions. This was altogether the things that he would try out. It wasn't working. Like there was a lineup that the Rockets had, Will, and I wanted to point it out. I tweeted out the other day. It had a plus 27 net rating. And that's really good.
Tari Eason lineup.
Yeah, so the lineup is Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green, Kenyon Martin Jr., Tari Eason, and Alperen Sengun. That lineup was 14th best in the entire NBA. Think of every lineup that's been thrown out there in the NBA that's played 100 possessions. That Rockets lineup, I'd say, was 14th best in the league. They didn't play it that much. They only played 169.
And you could argue, because I know, I already know how the Silas defense works. They're going to argue that he was mandated to play Jabari in those Tari minutes, but that's not true, because I know y'all remember those games where Jabari played 25 minutes a night and just didn't check it back in the fourth quarter. Like Stephen Silas, I know there's like I'll end my plane here. There's this like this notion that Raphael Stone and management or Tillman like mandated that he run the Deshaun Nix lineups and mandated that I think the only like quote unquote mandate was that KPJ started point guard. I think that's the only thing that they said you have to do. And like truth be told, was it a bad gamble, right?
Who is better on this roster?
Yeah, like on right this now, roster, who is the better point guard? Unless y'all think Deshaun Nix or Ty Washington were better as a point guard than KPJ, which I'm going to disagree at. Like, was it is that the worst outcome here? Like, that was the only thing we know for a fact they mandated. I don't think Raphael Stone came into a coach's meeting and said, you have to run Deshaun Nix as the backup point. As a matter of fact, if you listen to Stephen, I mean, not Stephen Silas, Raphael Stone's interview after that, or media presser after they let go of Stephen Silas, he pretty much says they think they did Ty Washington a disservice, which to me tells me he didn't have, like, I don't think that the decision to play Deshaun Nix over Ty was his. I think if it was his, he would have sent Ty, because he said he should have sent Ty to the G League sooner. And my thing is, I think if he knew that Deshaun Nix was going to get all those minutes, I think he would have sent Ty to the G League a long time ago. So, like, I don't think that was a Silas, I mean, that was a Stone decision.
imagine Will being the GM and you're sitting there and you're like, okay, he just threw the ball 10 feet, you know, 10 feet into the like 20th row, and okay, he's probably going to give Ty Washington an opportunity now because like this guy is clearly not playing well, and it just never really happened. It never really materialized, and so like, and I think that's one of the other things that kind of sucks is because we don't know.
Yes, we don't have evaluations on these guys, man. Right now. Not just Ty, a lot of them.
we do know that Ty Washington is way too good for G League basketball, because when he goes down there, he scores 50 points. He scores 38 points. He gets like these, you know, like 30 points and 10 assist games. We know that he's way too good for G League basketball. What we don't know is what kind of NBA player is he? And I think that is one of the things that we should have figured out this year when we were, you know, actively not really trying to win basketball games.
It's not just Tata. It's a lot of the guys on this roster. And not even just like what they are as basketball players, but what they are in different scenarios. Like, I'm somebody who, you know, who believes a lot in KPJ as a point guard, but like, can we see what happens if he plays off ball next to another lead ball hand? Like, what does that look like, right?
Maybe that looks cool to see Ty like, and Jalen Green and then him at small four. He's played small four before.
Yeah, so let's try stuff like that. Or like, let's try Tari and Jabari at the same time. We didn't really see those guys play together this season.
And they played really well in summer league.
We didn't see Garuba and Shingun play. Like, we did not. The only thing we got an accurate sample size on is what happens if KPJ is the lead ball handler. And I think that even if you're all in on KPJ as a point guard, I think most of us believe he should not be a primary ball handler. He should probably be more of a secondary, right? So, like, that's the only thing we really got data on these last two, three seasons, was that KPJ really shouldn't be a primary ball handler.
When you start talking about KPJ as a secondary ball handler, it gets me hyped, because – like, think about this. You got a 6'6 dude who can shoot lights out from, you know, as a spot up shooter.
We did not, but I'm not trying to cut you off here, but like, we didn't even see a healthy diet of catch and shoot KPJ this year. And like, that was something we saw like the last like 5-6 games of the season, and he was killing it, bro. Like, Brad, can you pull up those numbers on like the last maybe like 5-6 games on what his catch and shoot stats were? Because I want to say it was something insane. But
go ahead. And I also wanted to chime in on a stat that we were just kind of talking about. How often did we see Kevin Porter Jr. play shooting guard this year? Only 120 possessions. You know who the point guard was in those lineups? Deshaun Nix. Every single possession, Deshaun Nix. Ty Washington is the definition of a good floor general, keeps the TOs down, can get everybody involved. We didn't get that once. So stuff like that.
I'm looking at Ty Washington as a guy like the Tyus Jones over in Memphis.
Same. That's what I
think to. That he can be that kind of player. Like, he's a steady hand. He knows what he's doing. He
didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, like, he doesn't turn the ball over. He can create, you know, for other guys. He's not super athletic, but neither is Ty Jones. So, like, that's kind of my blueprint for, like, what I think Ty Washington can be in the NBA. And we didn't get to see that because, like I was saying, like, imagine Kevin Porter Jr. being a knockdown shooter at three-point, you know, which we know he is. And you're closing out on Kevin Porter Jr., and we know he has a crazy bag as far as handles. You know what I mean? Like, now you fully weaponize Kevin Porter Jr. We did him a disservice. He now on a closeout, he is attacking a defense that is out of position. And like, it's crazy. Like, as a point guard, like, Kevin Porter Jr. is okay. I think as a shooting guard and a secondary playmaker, like, Kevin Porter Jr. is a really good basketball player. And unfortunately, a lot of people in our community kind of like are basing everything, you know, as far as his game and like him not being an NBA player, him being a sixth man, on the fact that he is, you know, he's an okay point guard. But I think, you know, on the wing, you might have something. But the thing is, like, we drafted Jalen Green. So now we kind of have a situation where you have, you know, two of your best players are kind of playing the same position. So, like, I don't know. That's something for Rafael Stone to figure out. That's why he gets paid the big bucks, you know, and we just talk about it.
But I'll say this, and I'll pass it to Brad. The thing you kind of touched on, Vader, is, and I think this, I'll shout out Isaiah from the group chat, some on Twitter and spaces like that, but he said something that really, resonated with me. And he was like, we found a unique way to misuse every player on this team. And like, if you think about it, like, bro, I'll admit I was a little into this myself, but Jabari spent a lot of his time like in the corner to see the top of the key. Turns out, bro, is a mid-range killer. We didn't find out about that till the last third of the season. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's, as a coach, how do you not figure that out? That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to figure out ways to get your number three overall pick to succeed. And we had this guy, you know, spotting him shoot. And like, to be fair to him, he was supposed to be a knockdown, you know, three-point shooter. That's what he was drafted to do. But it's like, at a certain point in time, you got to be like, all right, that's not working. Let's mix it. Let's see what else he can do. Turns out the dude is like one of, I think you tweeted out the stat, Brian. Like, he's one of the best, like, mid after like the All-Star break, something like that. Dude's up there.
Yeah, so like, he was up there.
Like, we didn't see it. That was something.
Okay, and I'm gonna say one thing about that before Brad. But like, when we drafted Jabari, like, I'm like, okay, you know, everybody's talking about he's gonna be like this 3-and-D guy, 6'10", 6'11", 3-and-D guy. So like, he's pretty unique in that regard. So I'm like, that wins basketball games, that wins you games in the playoffs or whatever. But like what I saw from Jabari at the end of the season, that got me hyped. Like I did not know bro had like what he has as far as like being able to get on that elbow and post up, and he can just shoot over anybody. We saw him shoot over Evan Mobley, and to me, like, if you can shoot over Evan Mobley, shoot over anybody. Like if Evan Mobley contests your shot and you knock it down and that doesn't really bother you, like who else is going to contest your shot in better than that in the NBA? So like the fact that he got down there in the post and I saw some things from him I made a video about how he has some similar moves to Kevin Garnett. And as a 19-year-old, I'm not saying that he's Kevin Garnett, but I'm saying that he has an ability to get down there in the post, and he can shoot. Oh, he can turn and shoot over his right shoulder. He can turn and shoot over his left shoulder. Like some guys can only turn one way and shoot that way, and they're only comfortable. He's able to do it in both directions, in either direction, and that makes him dangerous. So you got this guy who's 6'11". He's a matchup nightmare for a small forward. And then you put a big guy on him. He's shown that he can at least, at the very least, get two dribbles in and create space and get a shot off. So that's what really has me excited about Jabari. Like, I think the three-point shooting will come. You know, there's nothing really wrong with his form. He displayed that he could do it in college. So I'm not really worried about that. But the fact that he showed me that he can go down there and at mid-range off the dribble and get his shots off and also post up and turn and shoot, like, I think we might be looking at a guy who, like, I think his ceiling is a lot higher than I initially thought it was.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree on the Jabari front. Should have been using him a lot more. Dayson Nixon had been getting all those minutes. A lot of things that were just questionable with Silas this season. And again, happy that they're going into phase two. They have a good list of coaching candidates. It was released recently, and we can dive into those. We'll be ready to start talking about these coaches. We're all going to come off and just list our top three guys for this coaching search. Should be coming up quickly. We're going to find out who it is soon. But as of right now, the Rockets list is Nick Nurse, Kenny Atkinson, Frank Vogel, James Borrego, Adrian Griffin. They got Ime Udoka, Scott Brooks, Rex Kalamanian. I think that's how you pronounce that. Kevin Young, and then, of course, Lee Sam Cassell used to play for the Houston Rockets. So we are going to give our top threes, and we'll let Will go first.
My top three, I have Nick Nurse ahead of everybody else. I think that's the guy that we have to get if he's available. Obviously, it's a little difficult because he hasn't actually parted ways with Toronto just yet. But should he become available, that's the guy that I hope that they target very heavily. I think that, I think that you look at one of the things that we struggled with this last year, one of the things that we wanted Steven Silas to do is accountability. And that's one of the biggest things that that Nick Nurse does, right? Nick Nurse is somebody who, he's not afraid to bench you, right? It's kind of funny because we had a Raptors fan join our post-game space after Steven Silas was let go. And he was like, you guys do not want Steven Silas. And this is why, because he's going to bench Jalen and Jalen doesn't play defense. I'm like, that sounds like what I want. that sounds like the kind I want Jalen Green to play defense. And if he doesn't play defense, sit him down. And it's not just Jalen Green, it's anybody. Like if KPJ, Shingun, Jabari, like if they're not executing the way they're supposed to be, if they're not giving effort, they're not, because that's one thing that we saw a lot this year. It wasn't just the fact that these guys can't play defense or not good defense. They just weren't trying sometimes, man. Like they just, they were out there just out there existing. And my thing is like, if you're going to, I can work with you trying and not being good, but if you're not trying at all and like, bro, I can't vibe with it. You got to sit down. And that's one thing they said, Nick Nurse will sit you. So above everything else, like I really vibe with that. Nick Nurse is also somebody who was like credited, in that 2019 postseason run, he came up with a defensive scheme that stopped both Giannis and Steph Curry in the same postseason. Now, obviously, with Steph Curry, a lot of that had to do with the fact that KD and Klay Thompson went down with injury. But, like, the whole box and one thing that kind of got popularized after that run, like, that was because that's the defensive scheme they ran to kind of slow down Steph Curry, at least won that championship. And then, what they did on Giannis in that Eastern Conference Finals series with Kawhi and how they built those walls to kind of slow him down, like, it's kind of forgotten because Giannis is, went on. He won a championship two seasons later. And, he's the best player in the game, MVP, DPOY, all that good stuff now. But, like, if you go back to 2019, there was some conversations that Giannis couldn't play in the postseason, right? I don't know if y'all remember that, but, like, there was the comment because he had flamed out. I think that was his second time in a row. And he flamed out a year later in 2020 in the bubble.
Miami Heat shut him down.
Yeah, and the conversation around Giannis was that he's a great player in the regular season, but you can't whip him in the playoffs. And Nick Nurse is one of the people who like started that narrative with how the Raptors guarded him that series. It was like, hey, this guy, like he can't do it. And obviously, like I said, the Bucks did go on to make some roster additions. Giannis got better and, you know, they won a championship. But like that was the narrative around him at that point in time, was that like this guy may not be able to play in the postseason. And Nick Nurse played a huge role in that. I mean, if nothing else, man, we remember Jalen's rookie season, how we were all complaining because Nick Nurse made it a mission that Jalen Green was not going to score that game. And Jalen Green didn't score that game, right? You remember that? So I think
we were calling Nick Nurse a lot of nasty names. I do recall that.
Yeah, because he stopped that streak. Jalen was on almost like a 30 bomb, you know, I think it was like six consecutive games with 30 points or more, and Nick Nurse stopped it. Or even beyond that, y'all remember how we couldn't forget that game. I remember we couldn't beat their full court press. Like there's so many different times where like we ran to like a Nick Nurse team and just didn't have nothing to do with it, right? And so I know that he hasn't seen the most regular season success since Kawhi has left, but I still think that like I think you got to look at what he's been given to work with. If your best offensive player outside of Pascal Siakam is like Gary Trent Jr., it's gonna be kind of hard. But obviously he's a great defensive coach, great defensive mind. He's gonna help with the accountability aspect. I think he's not an idiot when it comes to offense either. And even if he is like not up to par with the X's and O's, I'm hopeful that we still have Coach Mahmood on staff, who's like, that's what his team's bread and butter seems to be, is like the offensive side of it. And I've been using like the comparison of like of Jeff Bezdelic and Mike D'Antoni from 2018, where like Bezdelic handled the defense and D'Antoni was the offense, you know, offensive coordinator. Like I could see a nice tandem between Nick Nurse and Mahmood. I'm not even trying to pronounce his last name, but Mahmood, you know, that being like the offensive defensive coordinator type spiel. So that's why he's Nick Nurse is my top candidate. And then I got Ime Udoka at number two, although I had two and three kind of interchangeable. At three is Kenny Atkinson. But Ime Udoka, I think that, you know, just what he did with Boston last year, how they started the season kind of rough. And then he transformed that team, you know, into like one of the best, if not, I think they were the best defense last season. He got those guys on the same page defensively. And they were able to have their best success as, you know, under the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown era that they've ever seen with him. I'm a little iffy on it because the Celtics were a good team before Udoka got there. And they're a good team without Udoka. And like, you could argue that like Brad Stevens is still playing a huge role in that team. So that's why I'm a little iffy on Udoka, but you know, that's why I said him and Kenny Atkinson are kind of interchangeable for me, because I think Kenny Atkinson's kind of the opposite of like a Nick Nurse, in the sense that I think he's still another guy who's going to keep guys accountable and fight for your guys on the court. But he's more of the offensive side. He's a great offensive mind. Another guy who's really creative offensively. And then the argument for him is like, if you look at what the Golden State Warriors pipeline is doing for head coaches in the NBA right now, namely like Mike Brown, right? Mike Brown was somebody who he had a couple of head coaching stops. I think he coached like Cleveland. I think he might have coached the Lakers in New York before you know, ending up in Sacramento. And, you know, he wasn't the narrative around Mike Brown. Like, this guy's going to win Coach of the Year this year. And he was not a Coach of the Year kind of guy when he was coaching in Cleveland and L.A. and all those other stops before he got there. He went to Golden State, but, you know, worked under their coaching staff under that tutelage, and then went to Sacramento. And now he's, like I said, I think he's going to win Coach of the Year this year. He's already been voted Coach of the Year by the Coaches Association. And so, like, the arguments, like, Kenny Atkinson kind of did the same thing. And, like, the guy also saw success in Brooklyn with, like, really inferior rosters. Like, you know, if you go look at, like, those Nets rosters that he was, you know, I wouldn't say he saw success.
That's what I was going to talk about, Will.
But, yeah, you know, like.
Harris LeVert, bro. Yeah. D'Angelo Russell. Those are two best players.
Outside of those two guys, they was rocking, like, Jared Dudley, Sean Kilpatrick, early Joe Harris. It was like, it just wasn't
early Jared Allen, who wasn't,
it wasn't a lot of like quality mean guys on the team. Like I said, they didn't see a lot of success, but like that last season D'Lo was there, they went to the playoffs. And like, I don't know if y'all remember, that was like a really, that Philadelphia Nets series, that was like extremely entertaining. That was one of my favorite playoff series in like recent memory. And that was like Kenny Atkinson. Like, I think he's always kind of overachieved with his teams. And so, yeah, man, like that's my top three in that order. I got Nick Nurse, obviously, number one. I think he's head and shoulders above everybody else. And then Ime Udoka and Atkinson are like tied for two and three for me. You can kind of go either way. As long as one of those three guys are the coach next season, I'll be happy.
Yeah, go ahead, Vader.
I think I'm a zag a little bit. I don't think he's the most popular choice on Rocky's Twitter or IG right now. And honestly, like, as we sat here and we were talking, because we didn't discuss this before we hopped on, like, first of all, I'm just very thankful that Rafael Stone is putting together a list of very qualified candidates, right? We're not hearing a bunch of like guys who we've never heard of before. You know, this guy's an assistant over at, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks and, you know, whatever. And we don't even know who he is, right? So the fact that he's bringing in guys who, Frank Vogel has a championship, right? Nick Nurse has a championship. Emi Udoka has been on a staff that has won a championship, and he also has taken a team to the NBA Finals. And then you have Kenny Atkinson, who's overachieved and also been on a championship roster. So like and Sam Cassell, like Sam Cassell won 2 championships as a player for the Houston Rockets, and he has I think 14 years of assistant coaching experience. Like, these are all very qualified guys. So first of all, I just want to I'm thankful that we're just not getting a bunch of a list of guys who I'm like, who is that? And then I have to like hop on the internet, hop on Google, and try to figure out who these guys are. And so that gives me some hope and gives me excitement for the future as we go into phase 2. And so like with any of these guys, I mean, you can't really go wrong. Sam Cassell for me is a sentimental favorite, just because like I know Sam is a dog as a player, and I know that, you know, he is not going to like sugarcoat stuff for players. We saw the video how he got on James Harden or whatever. And like, he'll, you know, he's a guy that's going to hold guys accountable. However, you know, he probably is the, you know, out of the guys we have, he probably is the least, I want to say qualified, but because that sounds disrespectful. But like, for me, if I had to make a list right now, I'm going to put Kenny Atkinson number 1, just because of the fact that I think that he can fully utilize all the guys on the roster, as far as like, we really need a coach to come in and have a plan offensively. Like, we need a coach that's going to have a plan defensively, but like, what do you do with Alperen Şengün, right? I think Kenny Atkinson, coming from the coaching tree that he's coming from, and also we saw, like Will was bringing up, we saw him overachieve over in Brooklyn with D'Angelo Russell as your best player, with Caris LeVert probably as your second best player, and then with a bunch of guys who you never really heard of these guys before until that season. Like, I think Spencer Dinwiddie might have been on that team, but Spencer Dinwiddie was a nobody at the time. Jared Allen was still early, very early in his career, and he wasn't very good. You know, like you said, Jared Dilley, like, that was not a playoff roster. And Kenny Atkinson galvanized that team, and he led them to the playoffs, and we saw a lot of really good things from them. Now he's over there in Golden State, and he's seeing how it's done. I think that him being the head coach, I think he – just like you seen what Mike Brown did, is doing this season with Sabonis over in Sacramento, I think Kenny Atkinson can probably do something very similar with Alperen Şengün. So like, and like you said, he's very creative as an offensive mind. And that was even before he went to Golden State. So now he's over in Golden State and he's kind of seeing some of the things that they're doing. So like, I really like him as the next coach of the Houston Rockets. However, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with Emi Udoka or Nick Nurse. Like, any of those three guys, I'm super excited. Like, if you tell me Emi Udoka is going to be our next head coach, like, I'm probably, like, running around, you know, in the game room right now. I'm running around. If you telling me Nick Nurse is the next head coach, I'm jumping up and down, because I know that those guys have been there. They've seen pretty much everything. Udoka is from the, Greg Popovich coaching tree. Like, he was over there in San Antonio, so he got that experience, and then he went over to another successful franchise with the Boston Celtics. And you know, Brad Stevens doesn't get a lot of credit, but like, he put that team together. He assembled all that. Like, Brad Stevens was a really creative and real respected young coach at the time. You know, now he's moved up into the office, but and then like we all know, Nick Nurse was with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. He led them to a championship. He led the Toronto Raptors to a championship. And a lot of people talk about how his offense is not that great. But, I mean, there's things you can do about that. Like Will pointed out, like, he is great at adjustments. He's great at game planning. And I think this is a perfect opportunity to leave, like, a guy like Mahmoud on the staff. And Frank Vogel. Like, I don't want to leave Frank Vogel out. I made a post on Twitter yesterday, and a lot of people are, like, very against Frank Vogel. And although he is not in my top 4 of guys that I want, like, there is a plan to success of hiring Frank Vogel. That man has, like, and I've had some Laker fans contact me and said that they wish they had kept him. Like, so, like, we can't just be like, oh.
I would say, which I'll let you continue. I'll say, which is just crazy to me because I was a frequent listener of like Laker Spaces last year. They hated Vogel, man. And like, I guess to be fair to a lot of like fan bases, I don't think there's maybe 4 or 5 at most fan base that actually like their head coach. Like, I think everybody hates their head coach for the most part.
And what was Frank Vogel's biggest? His biggest issue was trying to figure out how to incorporate Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people have had issues with trying to figure out how to incorporate Russell Westbrook. So like
shout out Mike D and Tony.
Yeah. Shout out Mike D and now that he's gone over to the Clippers, I think Tyronn Lue has figured out how to like weaponize him again. But like he's a tricky fit. And so like I don't know. I think even though like he is not my number one choice, I'm not super mad at Frank Vogel as long as I know that we have a plan offensively, because I know Frank Vogel is a very good defensive coach.
Yeah, I was going to chime in with Frank Vogel. Again, yeah, as you guys point out, extremely good defensive coach, but offensively, that's a guy who really prioritizes. He kind of likes it.
I think I saw someone say today that he's like, out of the 7 out of the 10 years he's been head coach, he's had a bottom 10 offense every
time. Yeah, Roosh.
I think Roosh, yeah.
Okay. Defense, yes, it's on lock. Offense runs a lot of 5-out, and that's why you saw him trying to make Russell Westbrook into maybe a catch and shoot guy. And it's just the lineups weren't working. It wasn't gonna work. And he runs a lot of motion too. There's a different sets of motion, tries to get everybody involved, gets a lot of ball movement out there. But the offense as a whole, if you bring in a guy like Frank Vogel, you want to get an OC, because he obviously is not the guy to be running the offense. And another worry with Frank Vogel, when he went to Orlando, he stopped utilizing Vucevic in the post as much, who is known to be a post player. That would be a worry for me, at least through Alperen Şengün. Maybe he could adjust, you know, but with a guy like Vucevic, he needs to go on the post. A guy like Şengün needs to go on the post. So worries there, but I love what he said about Jalen Green. That was pretty cool. He really complimented him last year. Said, I love his game. He's blazing fast, quick first step, can shoot, he's electric. He's going to be a star in this league. You know, that's cool to hear from a coach of candidates to say last year, and now that he's a candidate to get the job. So, yeah, I'll let you take it there.
No, I was pretty much done. It's just right now we're just kind of nitpicking these guys, which I'm here for it. Like, I love it. Like, the fact that we have, like I said, we have qualified guys, and then we can kind of like, okay, this guy's really good at offense, but his defense, or vice versa. So as long as – and I think one of the things that is working in our advantage as fans – I think Raphael Stone has to get this right. I don't think Raphael Stone is going to be able to hire a third coach. So, like, he hires.
Oh, no. He's gone.
Right. He's hiring this guy. I don't think Raphael Stone gets to hire a third coach. So, Raphael Stone knows that his feet are to the fire. He knows that he has to do everything that he can, not only to hire the right guy, but to also give that guy the players that he needs to be successful, and also give him the coaching staff that he needs to be successful, because his job is also on the line. So as long as, if they hire Frank Vogel and they, or they hire Nick Nurse, or they hire, you know, whoever, you know, as long as they have a good staff in place, because like you said, Mike D'Antoni couldn't coach defense for nothing. Like, he was like, he was known as a bad defensive coach, but he brought in Jeff Bez, I can't even say his name.
Bezdelic.
Yeah. Brought in Jeff Bezdelic because he knew that, like, that man knew how to coach defense. And then you saw the fruits of that, right? That's when we saw like that the defense really took off with Ariza and with Luke and with PJ Tucker and all those. And he figured out how to he figured out like what James Harden was good at. And so he didn't make James Harden try to guard guys out in space, because James Harden was not good at doing that. Like, James Harden.
God, I miss that team, man.
James Harden was good at switching. He was good at defending low post. And he figured out how to like actually turn James Harden into a respectable defender. So there's ways to get around Frank Vogel not being a good offensive coach. So I'm happy with any of these guys, but like, if I have to put a list together, I'm going to go Kenny Atkinson, Nick Nurse, Adoka, and then I guess who was left? Frank Vogel and then Sam Cassell, in that order.
That's a good list. Yeah. I'm happy that Vader didn't go with the group thing. I know right now everyone is thinking Nurse at one, myself included. I like Nick Nurse at number one. Very good, of course, defensive coach, defensive schemes. Will pointed out, did a really good job in those playoff series against the Bucks. Did a good job against Stephen Curry. Knows how to shut guys down. That's something he'll definitely prioritize. This is a guy who threw a triple team at Alperen Şengün early in the season. You know, it's the kind of guy he's going to take out the best player on the other team. So the guy, Nick Nurse, he was in the Rockets organization before with the Vipers. He spoke about it. He said he loved every moment he had with the Vipers, never a down day, never a dull time. He said he really cherishes, you know, things like that. So it looks like the Raptors, you know, they're looking for change. They might kick it into a rebuild, get rid of some guys. And I think Nurse, he's highly sought after from this Rockets front office. And I think he's ultimately going to be the guy. I like his coaching style a lot. And he condenses these lineups, as we've mentioned. And that ain't no problem. Trust me. Ain't no problem. I'm not going to get mad if we got guys that's not going to be playing anymore, because this team needs to win games. You got to take a jump. We've had that developmental period. It's time to start racking in wins. It's time for these guys to start looking like a cohesive unit. As we'll point out, Jalen Green's not playing defense. Go sit on the bench and think about what you were doing wrong. You can come back in and play some defense right after that, you know? So I'm not tripping about Nick Nurse condensing his rotation. But you got to earn these minutes out here. It depends on who's losing minutes. Now, we'll see what happens if he does come in, and then we'll judge him from there. But again, we have to start winning basketball games and looking like a better team as a whole. So I got him at number one. Number two, I'll probably go with Ime Udoka. I like him a lot. What he did in Boston was very impressive. Obviously, you have to be skeptical of what happens, you know, with him, his whole little scandal. If that's past and due and there's nothing, you know, worrying about that situation, that's a guy you could bring in. Young coach, very direct, brutally honest. He's got some pushback on that in the past. But, you know, the players like it from what I've heard. And it's a guy you can bring in and you can trust to, you know, kick these guys in the gear and, you know, start taking a leap. You know, so I like him a lot. And then Kenny Atkinson, as you guys mentioned, the Brooklyn Nets, he had that team looking good. It was a fun, exciting team to watch. He's a really good player development guy. He even had a career in France, I want to say. Well, did you guys see that article that dropped about him? He was out in France, and they said if the Rockets do get the first pick, luckily 14% chance, we're praying for that, he would be a perfect guy for Victor Wembanyama because he spent a lot of time over there, and then he got a job making that leap over. But, yeah, that would be extremely cool to get Kenny over. Again, really good developmental guy. But as the other guys on the list, Frank Vogel, again, really good defensive mind. I'd probably have him fourth. Just because he does have that experience over a guy like Sam Cassell, it would be so cool if the Rockets got Sam Cassell. It just wouldn't be my personal hire. I preferably would want somebody with that experience and knows what they're doing. We just went through a guy, and I know everybody's different. I don't want to judge anybody off of somebody else, but just going through a coach who was a good assistant, he orchestrated the best offense in NBA history for the Dallas Mavericks and Steven Silas. It looked promising, and just didn't work out. So I feel like the ownership in the Rockets front office will go for a guy with more experience. But I'm happy they're doing their due diligence to even give these guys a chance, because at the end of the day, everybody needs a chance. And I think Sam Cassell is the guy who needs a chance. So and
Sam Cassell would have been a perfect hire 3 years ago, unfortunately, yeah, for him. Like, I think 3 years ago, like, I would have been like, yeah, like, bring Sam in, bro. Like, let Sam come in and let's see what he could do. But right now, unfortunately for him, this seems like, even though I think Sam Cassell is going to be a good head coach. I really do. I just don't know if the fit is right now. Just the timing is bad. You coming off a rookie head coach. And like you said, everybody's different. And Sam Cassell's personality is not Steven Silas's personality. Sam Cassell is like, Sam Cassell, like you were talking about people being brutally honest. I think that's Sam Cassell to a T. He's not going to put up with any crap. Like, he's probably more of in a John Lucas type of mold. But unfortunately, just the way the circumstances are playing out right now, I don't think Rafael Solon is going to be comfortable trusting his career in the hands of a guy who hasn't done it before.
Right. I 100% agree. So I think we all are in favor of the top three guys, I think, as a consensus. Vader had Kenny one. It ain't no problem. Again, I like Kenny Atkinson. And every guy that we've mentioned that the Rockets have brought in, I'm very impressed with this list. You'd have to think there were worries before, like, oh, the Rockets have issues with this, issues with that. Nobody's going to want to come. And they have an all-star list of guys to choose from. And I think we're all extremely excited to see who they choose and how this offseason goes, because it can go a lot of different ways depending on this is a draft lottery. But coach is really the most important thing, because a coach will set the culture, and that will turn everything around at the end of the day. So getting this coaching hire right is extremely important. So I'm excited to see what they do.
I want to add one more thing to the Nick Nurse. One of the reasons why I'm so high on him as a head coach too, if there's like one player or like archetype of guy that Nick Nurse has like specialized in developing and like weaponizing as far as like becoming a valuable contributor on an NBA team goes, it's like the 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", like wing, right? Like that's what the Toronto Raptors have kind of built their identity on these last couple of years. They don't really have the best like guard play or like big play. They got Jakob Poeltl at the deadline, but like they didn't really have the best guard or big play. We're running Siakam at five. These like I think last season and start this season, right? But one thing that they have had and they found success in, even though it's been, you know, moderate success, is they have like they're able to run lineups where everybody's like 6'8" and they're skilled, right? You can, and obviously, you know, you're not talking about like the best team on earth, but like Scottie Barnes has some ball handling skills to him. He can kind of run some point. Delano Banton, I think, is like 6'7" himself. He's another guy who kind of has some ball handling skills. He can kind of push the tempo. But then you have, you know, you had guys like Otto Porter Jr. and OG Anunoby, Thaddeus Young, Chris Boucher, like just a bunch of guys who are like 6'8", 6'9", super switchable, super versatile, who can like, you know, get it done on both ends of the floor, at least on paper they could, right? And that to me sounds like the kind of guy I want in Jabari Smith and Tari Eason's ear. Like I would love for Nick Nurse, because like those some of the kind of guys that Nick Nurse would like love to coach. I've always kind of mocked Tari Eason. Now that comp kind of gets worse and worse every day. But I mocked him to OG Anunoby originally, right? And so, like, if I could get Nick Nurse in the same locker room as Tari Eason and Jabari Smith and, like, let him kind of coach those guys and mold them into what he's kind of molded. Even, like, he kind of helped take Kawhi's game to a next level, right? Like, getting those guys to that level, which he's done time and time again, I'd be very excited for that for Tari and Jabari.
Yeah, no, that would be extremely fun. Having these defensive guys on the Rockets, they do have some good defensive guys that they brought in recently. That's what Stone's been trying to do, you can tell. And someone who can maximize them is Nick Nurse. So that'll be extremely fun. I have nothing else to add for this podcast. I'm excited again for who they hire. We're going to be diving in to just for the future on this podcast. We're going to be talking about player reviews, offseason, season review, a whole bunch of different stuff. So definitely stay tuned and subscribe if you want to tap in. But Vader, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I wanted to actually point out how you were saying, like, we need playoff basketball back in Houston. The playoffs have been, like, super exciting so far. If you haven't watched any of the playoff games, then, like, you did yourself a disservice. Like, yesterday there were a lot of really good games on, so I'm hoping, like, today's games kind of live up to what yesterday's games were. But I miss the Rockets being in the playoffs. You saw how cool it was yesterday after the Sacramento Kings, who hadn't been in the playoffs for 16 years, got a win, and they did the light the beam thing, and like the fans didn't want to go home. Like that, we missed that in Houston. So I'm looking very much forward to like having that experience again.
Yeah, no, I need that. I even tweeted out it was a video of CP3 hitting the shimmy on Stephen Curry. You know, the Toyota Center was electric, man. It's like we have to see that soon, hopefully. And depending on how this offseason goes, I think Will even tweeted it out. You know, he said, call me crazy, but if these happen, yeah, you know, they can mess around and make the play-in next year, and I think that's something that could potentially happen. So, yeah. Vader, we always have to thank you for coming on our podcast. You're a regular at this point. You come in anytime you want. And go ahead and let the people, again, know where they can find you on social
media. All right, you can find me on Twitter, IG, pretty much any social media platform at Vader H-Town. And then also check out the Rocket Fuel podcast on YouTube.
Yep. And for me, again, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, BradoNBA, just like that. You got your highlights, stats, all that stuff covered any time of the day, any time of the week. But that's me. Will, go ahead.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, all those other platforms at Bias Houston. Vader, as always, we appreciate you coming on the show. One of my favorite guests we have on the show. So, you know, thank you for coming on. We'll hopefully get you on sometime again, you know, whenever we need you. So, I appreciate
whenever,
that.
I told Brad, like, hey, I might as well just be whenever y'all need me to hop on. I'm on.
Third host at this point. But yeah, man, we appreciate you. We appreciate you guys for listening to the podcast, listening to the show, back to uploading regularly. And we'll see you guys next time.